Welcome to Luma Digest. I'm Noura. It's Friday afternoon, and I've got some properly interesting stories for you today. We're talking about robots that have served 100 million meals, a new surgical system that just got FDA clearance, and the coding model race that's heating up faster than anyone expected. Right, let's start with the one that made me stop and properly think. Chef Robotics just announced they've hit 100 million meal servings. Now, before your eyes glaze over at another milestone announcement, here's what actually matters. These aren't demos. These aren't lab tests. This is real production. Amy's Kitchen, facilities across the US, Canada, and Europe. Actual meals going to actual people. And here's the bit that really stood out to me. They doubled their cumulative servings in less than a year. That's not linear growth. That's a flywheel spinning up. More deployments mean more real-world data. More data means better models. Better models mean new customers and new use cases, and round it goes. But what I keep coming back to is how they did this. Chef didn't try to build a robot that cooks like a human. They started narrow, portioning, assembly, high volume, low complexity tasks. Because here's the thing, food ingredients are squishy and variable. Simulation doesn't work. You can't train a robot to handle a piece of chicken in a game engine and expect it to work in a real kitchen. So they built their training entirely on production data, from actual customer sites, real kitchens, real ingredients, real variability. And now they claim to have the largest real-world food manipulation dataset in the world. That's a completely different engineering philosophy than what we see in most AI companies. It's slower, it's messier, but it scales. The takeaway? Physical AI is moving from impressive demos to unglamorous production work, and the companies winning aren't the ones with the flashiest robots. They're the ones with the best data loops. Worth thinking about if you're building anything that touches the real world. Okay, so completely different corner of the robotics world now. LEM Surgical just got FDA clearance for something called the Dynamis Robotic Surgical System, and this is the first humanoid surgical platform cleared for spine surgery. Now, I know the word humanoid gets thrown around a lot, but in this context, it actually means something specific. The robot has arms that move like a surgeon's arms would move. That matters because spinal surgery is, well, it's delicate. You're working in tight spaces, around nerves, around critical structures. What stood out to me is how they handled a problem that would break most robotic systems. Line of sight tracking. In surgery, instruments get blocked from view constantly. Your hand is in the way, tissue is in the way, blood is in the way. Most systems lose tracking when that happens. Dynamis uses AI augmented robotics to maintain precise tool tracking even when it can't see the tool. It's running on NVIDIA Isaac and Jetson AGX Thor, which tells you something about the compute requirements. This isn't lightweight edge AI, this is serious real-time processing. And here's the broader signal. We're starting to see physical AI platforms get regulatory clearance for high-stakes environments. That's new. That changes what's possible in healthcare over the next few years. Something to keep an eye on. Right, let's talk about the coding model situation, because this week got interesting. Claude Opus 4.7 landed, and the benchmarks are genuinely impressive. It's scoring 64.3% on SWE Bench Pro. That's roughly 11 points up from version 4.6. Artificial Analysis ranked it number one on their coding eval with an implied 60% win rate against GPT, 5.4. Cursor reported an internal benchmark jump from 58% to 70%. Those are big numbers. But here's the catch that nobody's talking about enough. The new tokenizer means the same input can require up to 35% more tokens. So even though Anthropic's pricing per token stayed flat, your actual session cost just went up 20 to 30%. That's not a small difference if you're running production workloads. Now, Anthropic says overall token efficiency is still up 50% versus their former models. And users are reporting that the model requires less back and forth, less micromanagement, better instruction following. So you might actually save money if you're getting better output faster. But the token maths is something builders need to budget for. What I found really interesting is the shift in how people are using it. Less prompting, more delegation. You give it a task and step back. That's a meaningful change in the relationship between developer and model. And there's this fascinating debate brewing about whether 4.7 is a new base model or a distilled version of something called Mythos. The system card mentions Mythos. The benchmark suggests different architecture, but Anthropic hasn't confirmed anything. Why does that matter? Because if it's a distilled model, that tells you something about where Anthropic is focusing their compute. Smaller, faster, cheaper models that perform close to the big ones, that's a strategic bet. The takeaway? The coding model race just got tighter. And the companies that were waiting for GPT-5 to be the clear winner, they might need to rethink that. Have a think about what your team is building on and whether it's time to test alternatives. Now, staying on the builder side for a moment, there's a really solid piece out this week about agentic AI infrastructure. And one thing worth highlighting is how clearly it maps the problem space. On one side, we've got protocol adoption happening fast, MCP, AAIP for agent identity, WebEx skill for skill learning. These are the plumbing layers that let agents talk to each other and to tools. That side is moving. But on the other side, we've got a reliability problem, and it's not getting better as fast as the capability side is improving. There's an ArcSiv paper mentioned in the piece about numerical instability in large language models. Basically, these models can give you different answers to the same maths problem depending on context. That's not great if you're building something that needs to be deterministic. And here's the tension. Builders want to ship agentic systems now. The infrastructure is there, the protocols are maturing, but the reliability guarantees aren't. So, what do you do? Ship and iterate? Wait for stability? Build guardrails? The piece doesn't answer that, but it frames the decision really clearly. And I think that's valuable because a lot of the agentic AI conversation right now is hype and capability demos. Not enough people are talking about the boring bits, like, can you actually rely on this in production? Something to chew on if you're in that space. Okay. Last one. And this is more technical, but I think it's worth sharing because it bridges a gap that doesn't get bridged often enough. There's a piece called Six Things I Learned Building LLMs from Scratch That No Tutorial Teaches You. And it's exactly what it says on the tin. The author walks through the optimizations that production transformers actually use: rank stabilized scaling, quantization stability, architectural patterns that ship in real models but don't show up in the clean textbook explanations. And what I love about this is, it's honest. It's not a polished blog post about how easy everything is. It's the messy reality of taking something from theory to production, if you're building on LLMs, or even just trying to understand them properly. This is the kind of thing that saves you weeks of trial and error, because someone's already hit those walls and documented the way through. The link is in the show notes, worth your time. So, stepping back from all of that, here's the thread I keep seeing. We're in this moment where the infrastructure is ahead of the reliability, the capabilities are racing forward, but the guarantees aren't keeping pace, and that creates real decisions for builders. Do you ship on the bleeding edge and deal with the instability, or do you wait for things to settle and risk being late? There's no right answer, but it's worth thinking about where you are in that trade-off. Because the teams that get that balance right, they're the ones that'll still be here in 2 years. Something to think about over the weekend. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Links are in the show notes. I'm Noura. See you next time.